okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So you're actually both lawyers. You're not students. And there's only one on each side. So we're ready to hear argument.
Forever a student, Your Honor. And good morning. And may it please the court. My name is Douglas July, and I represent the petitioner in this matter, Juan Miguel Hernandez-Hernandez. I'll reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. I believe in this case, it really, from a general perspective, it comes down to one thing and one thing only, and that is the Ninth Circuit, this court, going to do the board's job for it? Clearly, the board legally erred in finding that the HS 11379 conviction is an aggravated felony, an otherwise removable offense. In fact, the government concedes that in their brief. So we have legal error there. There's no doubt about that. That should end the inquiry because the petitioner was a legal permanent resident of the United States, and that conviction was used to take away his status. And that
Let me ask you this. I think you argue that remand to the BIA is necessary to determine whether Hernandez is removable based on his conviction under 11366 because the record is quote-unquote inconclusive as to the identity of the controlled substance at issue. Do we really have jurisdiction to consider this issue because it wasn't raised before the BIA?
It didn't need, it wasn't, it shouldn't, it was never removable, it was never charged, it was never, excuse me, Your Honor, this is a convoluted, complex situation, and the court, the immigration judge never found that charge in the first place, and in fact, the board, maybe agree with the court that the court shouldn't even look at this 11366. It isn't part of the removability of petitioner's removability. The board, I did raise it before the board that the 11366 conviction was never addressed below, and it should be remanded. But if the court thinks that it wasn't part of the record of conviction for removability, then it shouldn't even be considered. And that's just it. The board never addressed it. At the certified administrative record, page 3 and 4, they never mentioned 8 U.S.C. 1227, 82III, which is the aggravated felony.
So we've got two issues, though, right? We've got the direct appeal, and then we have the motion to reopen, right?
I only want to focus on the motion to reopen today, Your Honor. I'll rest on the CAT arguments on my brief. I don't think those are very novel issues, and the real spine of this case is that there was legal error in finding that the 11379 was removable, and then as an ancillary matter,
counsel, can I ask you about the I get these numbers wrong, the 379. You know, and you said there's legally it was legal error by the BIA, and the government doesn't contest that, so that's pretty powerful. That's pretty helpful to you. But I'm kind of struggling. What is the standard that the BIA is supposed to apply in reopening? Because, I mean, you would concede it's obviously supposed to be a pretty stringent standard. You don't want to just let people be able to reopen things willy-nilly. So what is the standard?
The general standard that the board cites is matter of Coelho, which I think what the court is getting at is, quote-unquote, will likely change the result in this case. But I think that when you have a legal permanent resident, that NAF controls, NAF v. Gonzalez, 467 F3D 1185, that's a Ninth Circuit case, 2006, which is cited. And NAF basically says, on a motion to reopen, it's the government's burden to prove that a conviction exists if the respondent or
the government did that.
The government did not respond to the board's.
Originally, the government did that, but then the circumstances changed, which happens. In fact, you rarely could succeed on a motion to reopen if the circumstances didn't change. But typically, it's sort of a prejudice standard. You know, sort of you have to not only show the circumstances have changed, but that it would actually, it would presumably, or whatever the standard is, change the result. And so it just seems to me kind of odd that in a circumstance like this, that you don't have to make some sort of prima facie showing that you would actually prevail in the motion to reopen. You normally would have to do that in a motion to reopen. So just because you raise, let me give you an example and see if this illustrates. Let's say your client was convicted of second degree murder, right, and was going to be, and for some reason didn't spend too long a time in prison, and so after that period was going to be deported. Then why, under if it's true that you sort of just get a free pass if the conviction that's stated in the notice of removal is gone, why wouldn't you be inclined to go back to the government and say, you know what, I'd like to change and see if you'd be open to me getting a first-degree murder conviction, you know, something that's clearly worse. And so now that it's a first-degree murder conviction, now we have to start all over again from ground one. You have to, you know, the BIA can't say, well, obviously you'd be removable for a first-degree also. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, that seems to be the implication of yours and the government's. And so I'm saying this, Mr. George, so you can be thinking about this. I want to know why the government just conceded on 379. And I want to know from you why the mere fact that it's changed, why it was wrong for the BIA to say, yeah, but you'd be removable based on this too.
But the board doesn't. So that's the problem. The board uses the wrong standard. They cite Salviego Fernandez v. Gonzalez. They cite 8 U.S.C. 1229 B.A. Those are standards used for applying for relief. That's an entirely different standard.
So now that's actually important. So you think your beef is with the, you're saying the board, we shouldn't, the board was wrong, not necessarily just because it said you would also be removable even as a lawful permanent resident for this, but because it didn't actually even do that analysis.
It didn't even say that. Okay. It doesn't mention that the 11366 is removable. They state it's an aggravated felony, which leads us to believe maybe, you know, let's try to read their minds a little bit. Let's be reasonable. Give them a little bit of deference. They're the board. But if we read that paragraph where they cite the 11366, it's just not fair to the petitioner to think that they found him removable on the 11366 when every single citation they give, Salviejo Fernandez, INA 240A3, all the way down to Coelho, all of those cases involve the respondent or the petitioner's burden to prove eligibility for relief. In fact, if we read Salviejo Fernandez at the second hearing, DHS asserted that the IJ agreed that Salviejo's 11366 conviction constituted an aggravated felony barring cancellation of removal. That case has nothing to do with the department's burden to prove removability. And I don't think it's fair. And here's the crusher for me is if we look at the record at page 367, and this is me because I litigated this case from the beginning. No, Your Honor, but I guess what I would just, all I'm confirming is the court did not find the 11366 to be an aggravated felony. Judge, to Mr. July, I believe that's correct. So from the beginning, that's off my plate, and I'm not arguing that.
It seems to me that you're taking the position, though, that Section 11366 conviction was not for, quote, maintaining a place for the purpose of selling methamphetamine, unquote. But I'm looking, but can you address a paragraph in the one criminal complaint that appears to identify methamphetamine in connection with the charge?
Yes, in fact, Your Honor, I argued that before the judge, but the judge held it in abeyance because it was just such a headache. Maybe draw a little too far there.
Well, I guess I'm struggling with the fact that it just seems like your petitioner is not removable at all? Because if I'm focusing on a motion to reopen, there's got to be some reason to reopen it. And to me, I'm looking like that 11366.
I'm challenging the removability. I'm challenging the grounds that the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals found him removable.
You said, but you said we're focusing on the motion to reopen. So if I grant the motion to reopen, I would like to think that there's some possibility yes, that you could be successful. And I'm having a hard time seeing
that. I will cite the court to the record at page 343, which I initially preserved that issue. I'm going to argue, and I'm quoting now, quote, I'm going to argue, of course, for respondent that it's a straight 11-366 with no mention of the drug, therefore he's not removable.
But then address the paragraph in one of the criminal complaints that talks about methamphetamine in conjunction with the charge.
There's an issue with the count one, which I, so, okay, sorry. We have Medina Lara, the holder, and basically, it's since it's the government's burden, and we have a conflict, okay? In the minute order, it says count one, but on the written plea agreement, the 11-366 is silent. It doesn't say, it doesn't reference a count one. It doesn't say the name of the drug. And in Medina Lara, it's the same situation, where basically the respondent slash petitioner said to the government, hey, or argued, hey, I don't think you've met your burden here. We're asking that the government produce a transcript. And the government didn't produce a transcript. And they didn't produce a transcript in this case. And I preserved the argument below. And the judge basically just said, look, we don't need to address this right now. We're not going to address it. We're going to move on. And we did. And then when we vacated the convictions that did make him removable, we came back and we said, look, now this needs to, we need a decision on this 11-366. It needs to be remanded back down so we can properly litigate it. And again, this just brings me back to, I understand when something is going to be a clear waste of time. And I think it's best represented by my quote from Chenery, which is a Supreme Court case, at page 11 of my brief. The commission, in Chenery, the commission had applied the wrong standards to the adjudication of a complex factual situation. And the court held that it would not undertake to decide whether the commission's result might have been justified on some other basis. The board used the wrong standard. First, they committed legal error. Ding dong. Number two, they used the wrong standard. This is a complex case of facts. All we're asking for here, and I think what's prudent, just, right, fair to my client, is a remand.
Can I take you? Yes. Taking me a second to go, because I was asking you why the, and I'm curious to hear from the government on this too, why the BIA wouldn't be proper for the BIA to just say, I know you've, you know, my first-degree, second-degree murder example. I know you've gotten some state government to change it out, but what you've gotten them to change it out, you would be equally removable for. And I thought your answer to me was, yeah, but what the BIA cited to was this, was not for removing somebody who has lawful permanent resident status, but somebody who, you know, had not been admitted.
Was applying for relief. Yeah, that person actually did have legal permanent residence, but it was in the context of them applying for relief, so I don't want to get that confused.
Applying for relief, and so is that, it says, you know, because what they cite to is section, in that paragraph of the BIA decision, they cite to section 8 U.S.C., section 8 U.S.C. 1227A2BI, and isn't that the same section that you would be removable?
No, it's not. There's the mistake, Your Honor. There it is right there. INA 237A2BI is also codified at 8 U.S.C. 1227A2BI, and that is the controlled substance removability. That is not the aggravated felony removability. And if we go down the other statutory section that they cite when talking about aggravated felonies, is 240A3, section small, parens small a, parens 3. And that is, it relates to relief. That's a cancellation of removal. It's for purposes of applying for relief. It's if it was not his burden. I've got a minute left. I want to reserve that for rebuttal if possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any questions right now?
No, we better wait for his rebuttal.
Okay. All right. Okay, you can reserve. All right. We'll hear from the respondent.
Mr. Jordan, can you tell me why the government did not defend the BIA's, you know, the basis of the BIA's actual decision here? It seems to me like you're kind of, you know, usually making a futility argument is a bit of a Hail Mary, and you put your bet on a Hail Mary instead of just going with what the BIA did. So why did you do that?
I'll admit I hadn't thought about the case the way Your Honor has just described it in terms of that. I think it sort of adds on to the argument that we did make about the 11366 conviction. It's sort of the same notion that the board is looking at this and saying it's not going to make a difference. Now, the board relied on the consequences of the 11379 conviction.
Well, I was wondering, is there some case that I'm missing where the board, I understand that the idea here is, well, there's no longer, this is not in the NTA. This is not in the NTA, right? The new conviction is obviously not in the NTA because back when the NTA was issued, the conviction didn't have this conviction. But it's not clear to me why, just because it's not in the NTA, the board in doing the normal analysis it does in a motion to reopen and saying, why would this make a difference, can't say, you know, you're gonna be, say what they said, which is you're gonna be removable for this too. Yeah, sure, they're gonna have to amend the NTA, they're gonna have to go through steps, but the whole purpose of this, of the motion to reopen, we've said, I think, as a court, the reason that motions to reopen are disfavored is we don't want people to be able to just do stall tactics. So use the kind of stylized and crazy example of the, you know, you're convicted of second-degree murder, but then you go for something worse, right? You go for something worse just to keep yourself from being removed because it would buy you another year or two. That's exactly what we're about. So is that not a concern here? Can you respond to your opposing counsel's argument that, yeah, well, that's not what the BIA had error, even assuming the BIA was okay in doing what I'm saying they should be able to do, that there's errors inherent in what they did. And they cited to the wrong cases, the wrong provisions.
Well, the provision that they cite to is the controlled substance removability provision, the 1227A2B1. I mean, that's exactly what was laid out in the notice to appear on page 859 of the record. And that would actually apply to the 11366 conviction.
You would come back and you'd amend, right? Like you'd come back and you'd amend the notice to appear to add this 379 instead of 378, and you'd seek to remove them based on it being a controlled substance conviction. And I think to Judge Callahan, some of the stuff she was pointing out, not really, you can't really dispute that this was for methamphetamine. You just can. And so, I mean, So, just to be clear, I don't want to take up too much time, but your point is not that you didn't somehow reject the argument that's occurring to me now. It's just that you just didn't make the argument.
Correct, Your Honor. I didn't concede in that. I believe I dropped one footnote that just said we weren't defending it. However, I probably need to withdraw that footnote given this argument that Your Honor is proposing or laying out.
I have a follow-up question for you. We cannot decide the case on a ground that the BIA didn't decide the case, right? So we're sort of bound to the BIA's decision, except for unless there's a futility, which is you decided to go that really hard route here. But can we decide the ground? Can we actually defend the BIA when the Department of Justice screws up and doesn't do a good job? Can we decide ground on the basis the BIA did when the Department of Justice says, well, we're not going to defend that if we think they're right?
Well, I mean, that's in the board's decision. That's what the board decided. So absolutely it can. I'll file 20HA this afternoon and withdraw that footnote and lay out in, you know, the 350 words this argument. Given that's, I mean, that's the whole purpose of a Rule 20HA letter is to things that become apparent later than were apparent.
I'd take more than a Rule 20HA letter because, you know, you're the other side could be prejudiced by the fact that they haven't had a chance to respond to us. I'll have to think about that, but it's helpful that I know now why this happened. Thank you.
Well, they certainly had the opportunity to make the reject that argument in terms of their opening brief. I mean, that this was what the board said, and so they could have said the board is completely wrong. I think they went on the sort of more due processy type of grounds. I don't remember exactly what grounds.
And you weren't relying on it. Why would they rise to that if you weren't relying on it?
Well, I'm talking about their opening brief. This was their first opportunity. Before I even filed my brief, they didn't defend this argument or say the board was wrong to sort of
that the BIA erred in failing to make any findings as to whether the conviction under Section 11366 makes them removable. Why is a remand to the BIA not necessary here?
Well, there's nothing left for the board to do. That conviction was alleged in the notice to appear. The immigration judge made a factual finding and sustained that allegation and made a finding that it involved methamphetamine. And the board has now said that conviction is an aggravated felony. And whether it's an aggravated felony is a question of law. It doesn't change whether it's in the relief context or whether it's in the removability context. So the agency has made all the necessary findings to determine that conviction renders petitioner removable. Even though it didn't explicitly say that, all it would do on remand is just write that one sentence and say, we find he's removable for it. And I think it goes to the same argument that Judge Van Dyke was laying out of, it's another reason why it wouldn't make a difference to reopen, because that's all that's left to do. There's nothing more. There's no more fact-finding that needs to be done. There's no more legal analysis. All those questions are answered.
So I think one of the things, how do you respond to petitioner's argument that Health and Safety Codes 11366 could be divisible for purposes of deportability, even if it is not for purposes of relief under Salviejo Fernandez versus Gonzalez?
I honestly don't understand that argument. I don't understand why it would be divisible in one context and not divisible in another. As the court has said many times, whether something is
So I thought about this because I think his argument is the difference in burden, right? So if you have the burden versus him having the burden, that could, in theory, that could make a difference if the categorical analysis depended upon facts, right? Because burdens go to facts, right? But as I understand it, the categorical analysis goes to a legal, it's purely a legal analysis. So that's the problem, I think, in their argument. But their argument is if you have the burden when you're actually trying to remove a lawful permanent resident versus them having the burden to show that they're not removable, then it doesn't, then ambiguity cuts against you in one instance and against them in the other instance. So you could see where that, but that only matters if there's a factual issue here. And I'm not sure, I don't think there is with the category. Is that, am I right in that?
That's my understanding. As I said, the immigration judge found that this was, this conviction existed and it involved methamphetamine, and then petitioner never challenged that to the board, and arguably it's unexhausted, any sort of contention that there's some sort of factual dispute about the conviction. And I certainly agree that whoever bears the burden bears the consequences of not meeting that burden, but there's no factual dispute here, and there's no legal dispute. The court has said this is categorically an aggravated felony, and the agency has made the necessary factual findings that the conviction exists.
It's not a modified, in modified categorical context. This is categorical, not modified categorical, right? Here.
That's my read of Salviejo, yes,
sir. Okay, because that's actually pretty important, because in the modified categorical, you can provide documents as sort of like what, and in that's where whoever had the burden would make a difference. But if it's just pure categorical, it's not clear to me why somebody having the burden would make it. That seems to be their petitioner's argument, is that the burden being differently, and that's a good argument, except for the fact that facts make no difference in the categorical approach, I don't think. That's all part of the categorical approach.
If he'll tell me what the dispute is or what sort of the inconclusiveness is, I'll respond to it, but I'm not sure what dispute exists or what inconclusiveness there is. The board has said it's an aggravated felony. It did say it in the relief context and it's a motion to reopen decision, but that's the end of the end. There's no other, we don't look at it a different way because it's a legal question. So whether it's an aggravated felony doesn't matter, the context doesn't matter at that point. And that dispute wasn't about, was he actually convicted of it? Did it actually involve meth? Because the immigration judge made those findings, and he's never challenged those findings. conviction out there that was charged.
I guess since you've changed your, after listening to Judge Van Dyke, you altered your argument a bit. But I want to make, do you still concede that the conviction under 11379 cannot serve as a basis for removability here because it was not charged in the original NTA?
I'll say yes in a very limited way. I'll say because it wasn't charged in this notice to appear, I'm not saying for all purposes it couldn't be a basis for removability. For example, if this case does go back, and the Department of Homeland Security decides to...
of the position that it's in right now.
Yes. The board should not have said that is a definitive grounds of removability. Outside the context that Judge Van Dyke has said of that can be a basis for not showing a difference should the proceedings be reopened. So it's sort of two different contexts. In terms of...
Now I'm confused. I thought you were saying that now you thought that the board's, you know, the paragraph, and, you know, it's, I guess it's three and four, the record three and four of one of the two records, that you, that the paragraph that spans those two pages, that you were saying, you know, my view was, reading that paragraph as, there's no reason to reopen this because it wouldn't change the result because you could just amend the NTA and they would be, and he would be clearly removable for that. And it, well, I was asking, why wouldn't, and I thought you were saying, well, yeah, actually, why wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. But now, in response to Judge Callahan's question, you're saying, well, I still think, I think we all understand, he's not currently removable in that NTA because it's not listed. What I'm asking, that doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is what kind of analysis is the can the board do? Can the board say, just because it's been changed from to a different type of murder that still makes you clearly removable, but it's not, now the new type of murder isn't in the NTA, can we look at, well, you'd still be removable. Yeah, the government would have to do several steps to get you removed, but you'd still be removable, so we're not going to grant your motion to reopen because it won't make a difference. I thought your answer to that was, yeah, that's not it. There's no reason the board can't do that.
Anyway, my answer hasn't changed on that. I thought Judge Callahan was asking, is he removable today for the 11379 conviction? So I may have misunderstood that question.
Let's see. So what happened was, I went back and looked. What happened was, your colleague on the other side filed, you know, in their opening brief, it's not like they didn't address this at all. He just said what you said, he's not removable today. And then you conceded. And you're like, okay, I'm not going to rely on that. And you didn't address the argument of, yeah, just because he's not removable today doesn't mean that the BIA was wrong. So what I'm trying to figure out is, like, and I thought you were saying, well, maybe the BIA could have been defended. I probably should have done that. I'm trying to figure out what to do with, I don't know if I like your Hail Mary argument, but I like the argument you didn't make. You didn't make, but the BIA made. So what do I do with that?
Well, because the board made it, that's something that the court can deny the petition on. That wouldn't be a violation of Chenery or something like that. That's the ground that the board ruled on. Just because, I mean, I didn't concede the argument. So there's no, I mean, and that would just be sort of a provincial type of...
We can ask your colleague on our side, but I don't know, maybe give you both an opportunity to actually brief this issue. But I don't know, I'll have to talk to my colleagues. But let me just ask you, would you be willing to brief the issue if we asked for further briefing, a supplemental briefing on that particular issue?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Your time is basically 5 seconds.
Yes.
Are you done?
The court should deny the petitions. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And you have a minute.
Lightning round, Your Honors. Okay, page 330 of the record. There was a whole colloquy about arguing back and forth about 11366.
We specifically... Sorry, counsel, there's two records. Is the motion to reopen one or the other one?
The motion to reopen record, the 20-dash case. We specifically argued that it was an inconclusive record, and the court's concerned about facts and the modified categorical approach. Look at Prieta v. Wilkinson, which I think the court's familiar with. I have cited it. Judge Gorsuch's opinion, an inconclusive record falls out of favor of the alien applying for relief. There it is. 11366 could be the modified categorical approach, but we don't know. The board should have made a decision on it and used the correct standards and analyzed it. They didn't do that. No Number two, 11379 is in no way, shape, or form can ever be a removable offense, because we look at page 15 of the 20-dash record of conviction, and we see that it's count four. There's no reference to count four. It's the department's burden. So even if we brief the heck out of this thing, the answer is no. And lastly, refer this to mediation, please, so we can get this out of your hair. Thank you.
Let me ask a question, if I can indulge. If I wanted more cowbell on the issue that I've been asking all these questions about, which is the issue the government sort of bailed on, which is defending what the BIA actually said here, would that be something that you could supply supplemental briefing on? In your briefing, yes, you did address a little bit in the opening brief, but in the opening brief you just said that what you just said now, which is that it's not in the NTA. But my point is, who cares if it's on the NTA, if it's obvious that the government could easily amend the NTA and that you would be clearly removable, then it's not clear to me why the BIA is so, and you didn't address that, would you?
Certainly, I maybe have more visibility than the court does on that, and I'm happy to brief it. The answer is going to be no on that it won't be removable. I think that's why the government didn't brief it, but the court has the power to refer cases after oral argument to mediation. I think this is a great candidate, and I think we can get a remand without the use of the court. But thank you.
All right. Thank you both for your argument. This matter will stand submitted.